This interview is for civil service reform in Sierra Leone with Albert Bokeri, Senior Permanent Secretary of the Public Service Commission. Interviewer is Summer Lopez. Mr. Bokeri, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I'd like to start just by asking you to describe a little bit your role in public sector reform here, if you could talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Yeah, we, as a commission, were always involved in civil service reform. The reason being, we, on this end, as a commission, we give the very best officers that will be employed, that work in various line ministries, MDAs, agencies, because we believe there should be excellence, effectiveness, and performance. So we make sure we give the very best candidates with the right credentials to be employed, to be placed in various MDAs in the service. So that is why we are involved, we are always involved in civil service reform. Okay.
And how long have you been involved in this personally?
As long as, because as an administrator, I worked for 30 years almost, and since then I have been involved in reforms. In various ministries I've worked.
And what other ministries have you worked in?
I've worked in the Ministry of Local Government and Community Development, Ministry of Development and Ministry of Development and yes, Ministry of Development. I've worked in the Ministry of Tourism, Labor. I've worked in the provinces as district officer, provincial secretary, the highest position in the field. Then I've worked in the Public Service Commission now. This is my second inning. I've worked there before 6 years. Then I was transferred out to Minister of Parliamentary and Political Affairs. I worked there for 3 years. I left there. I worked the longest in the Ministry of Internal Affairs because I go on and off. I go as in the field. I come back, work for some time, then I'm sent back. So the only ministry I've not worked is trade and industry, finance, foreign affairs, education. Quite apart from that, I've worked in almost all the other ministries.
And how do you think that experience of working in the ministries has helped you in your work on reform?
It has helped a lot because I deal with this with officers, and some of the ministries are professional ministries, like the Ministry of Education, the teachers. These are technical people. When you work with them, you know their own. You learn about their own technical areas. If you go to development, that we have the professional wing who deals purely with development in the field. They deal with NGOs, they register NGOs. So when you work with them, when you work there, you get a wealth of experience with NGOs, both national and international organizations. Then as well as you combine the two with your administrative job, because we're always, as the permanent secretary or head of administration in all of these ministries, you are always at the helm of things. You coordinate development, donor agencies, etc., and that has really helped me.
Can you describe a little bit about your work here at the Public Service Commission and what the commission's role is?
Okay. I am the administrative head of this commission. The political head, there's a political wing of this commission, headed by a chairman plus four members, making five. These are the political head, and they are appointed directly by His Excellency the President. I advise them on the administrative aspect of how we can go about recruitment, because we do recruitment. We engage school leavers from tertiary and the institutions. You know, job seekers, they come. We have to advise them as how we should go about that, because we are independent. This commission is independent. It's quite apart from every interference, except that the president has to consult this commission on appointment in the civil service. There are other appointments he cannot consult us, because that one is political. So what any appointment relating to the civil service, he usually consults the commission. Okay.
Great. Could you talk a little bit about what the capacity in the public sector has been in the past and where it is now?
Well, before the war, there was no opportunity for officers to go on training. At that time before the war, we did not take seriously the training needs of the civil servants in the civil service. But just after the war, government saw the need that these people, the civil service, need to be really equipped with the best caliber of people to work in the service for effective service delivery. And you can do this effectively when these officers are trained. So now government lay a very high premium on training needs. Okay? So this time around, every ministry, every department has a training component in their vote. Like, we have just submitted our estimate for next financial year. And in that, I have factored a lot of money in both local training as well as overseas training. So I have two officers here now who are doing their masters. Just after that, next year they'll find to go out, and I'll be able to pay from my vote for them to go out and get their doctorate and come back. And when they come back, their experience shared, obtained there in the course of their education, they come back and relate that to the service, that the country will move forward. So we live very high premium now on the human resource development.
And could you talk a little bit about how public sector reform got started, what motivated it, who has kind of been the leaders?
Well, just after the war, the United Nations, UNDP, really spearheaded all reforms, UNDP, because they finance every sector of reform in the civil service. So we have to be very grateful and appreciative of their effort. So after the war, everything was haywire. So they put mechanisms in place to really bring semblance of good governance. In fact, that led us to this most recent two elections, the general and presidential election, which went through successfully, and 2 weeks ago, the local government elections. They have played a pivotal role in seeing that sanity returns to this nation, and we are seeing a ray of hope. So UNDP and DFID, they have been a very good partners in this.
And what were some of the competencies that the government or donors or whoever really wanted to build in this country amongst the civil service?
Accountability, transparency, dedication to work.
And do you think those were the right priorities?
Indeed, yeah.
Wonderful. Let's go ahead and talk about recruitment a little bit. So often one goal is to reduce the degree to which employment and recruitment and depends on political ties. So I know that, that has been one of the things here. So I'm wondering if you could describe some of the changes in recruitment and promotion procedures that have been put in place here or that are being developed, perhaps.
Well, in terms of recruitment, the commission serves as the we work in conjunction with the established secretary's office. The established secretary's office serves as the clearinghouse for the commission. The ES office, which, as I told you earlier, that come the 7th of August, it is going to be transformed into Human Resource Management Office. That office create job, advertise vacant positions in the service, and inform this commission about the number of vacancies and in various line ministries. Let's say, for example, if they need 100 aquaculturists or aquaculture officers in the Ministry of Aquaculture and Food Security, they want to fill those vacancies. He declared that to us, informed us, we as a commission, because we have to play a playing field, a clear level ground for every competent and non-competent people to advertise, to apply. We send adverts out, put it out for 2 months. We make sure that this advert, the information got down to the farthest distance of the country. So I'll give them opportunity, because Freetown is not Sierra Leone per se. We have Bo, Kenema, Kono, Kailan. Those are places with numerous educational institutions. And the leavers, school leavers in those areas, they too want to be placed, they want jobs. So we make sure that the advert goes to the farthest distance of the nation. Then after that, they come. When they got the news, they come. We give them form. We have form, PSC form 8, public service form 8. That one, I have a sample, but it's in the cupboard there. We give you, register it, that you go and fill it. You add your CV, your credential, your CV, you send it back. There's always, we set a closing date about a month or so. After that, we close the closing date, we stop receiving. They will scrutinize. We begin scrutinizing the forms. We look for the best materials to be interviewed for interview. We send the most competent ones, which we feel will get the job so advertised. We send those forms to the line ministry. If it is from foreign affairs, we send it there to them, for the head of department to countersign those forms. And they send it back. They shortlist. We shortlist first, then they shortlist second, then they send it back. Then after that, we set a date for them, for those that went through the shortlisting. We set a date for them to be interviewed. So we send letters of invitation to them. They come on that date, well-dressed. There's a conference hall there. We interview them. We take them on merit, not on political basis or regional basis, not on tribalism, not on religious bias, but purely on merit. So we take them after the interview. As the interview goes, the commissioners, they give their rating. After that, we sit and compile. After the compilation, the very best of those candidates interview, we issue an order. We order that Mr. X, Y, Z have been, the commission has ordered for their appointment, as if it's a stenographer or whatever post. They will send it back to the established secretary's office. Then we communicate to you. If you have gone through, if you are fortunate to go through, they communicate with you. They give you a letter of appointment with conditions of service, remuneration, etc., etc., etc. We don't form or are not involved in any way involved in setting conditions of service or salaries. That is purely the domain of the Mr. Anshu Tucker's office, the Assembly Secretary's office.
The
establishment. So that's all, yeah.
What do you do if somebody is invited to interview who lives very far away and they're unable to come?
Yes, we give them time. We give them time. They will come. Normally they come after the interview. Because after the interview, you get the information. They will come. They say, we did not get the information on time, so that's why we are late. We give it a second time. We give it a second chance. We will set another date for them to be interviewed. But we make sure that in as much as they got the information about the vacancy and they want to be considered, we give them their own chance. But this time around, I've seen the problem. Because in time past, we just feel that Freetown is Sierra Leone passé. So I've just put a proposal that this time around we move the commission a bit closer to the people, the applicants, because of this decentralization. So very soon we'll be taking the commission to regional headquarters like Bou, Kenema, Makeni. If we go to Makeni, the commission moves to Makeni. Those in that region, that district, will be able to meet us on time. Same like Kono. In the east, if we go to Kenema, we'll cover Kono and all the other places. So I'm making that proposal. It's under consideration. So by so doing, we minimize the rate of absenteeism in interviews. But our constraint, as I told the three gentlemen who came from UNDP the last time, that we need transportation because we cannot walk from here to those places. We want them to be to enhance us by assisting us with transportation, so we can go closer to them.
And as far as looking at promotion, what steps have been taken to monitor the performance of civil servants and to promote on the basis of high performance?
Promotions are done yearly. Every 3 years. After every year, line ministries, head of line ministries, departments, they come here, they take annual confidential report forms, ACR forms, for both junior as well as senior, technical as well as non-technical. They go and fill it. The head of departments resubmit them to us. In that form, we'll get to know from their immediate head, from the head of the line ministries, whether candidate Y, who wants this promotion, has been effective, efficient, hardworking, duty conscious, and all the rest of it. They can give us an insight of the officer they are presenting for promotion. So that from those recommendations come from all our ministries. Every year it comes. We put it in our files, in our archives. Year two, the same. Year three, the same. At times for some officers, there can be variations. There is always consistency. If they have been punctual, we see that consistency in some of them. Some of them we default. So look at it. We look at these forms, at these recommendations from various line ministries relating to various officers in various grades, senior as well as junior and intermediate grades. We look at it. Then there are meetings. We meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesdays and Thursdays purely for meetings, for interview. We interview candidates for various positions in various line ministries. Then Wednesdays, we meet. We discuss crucial issues that requires the attention of government. If a candidate has petitioned that he or she has been superseded, and he or she wants the commission to intervene to really be magnanimous and review. We look at those issues on Wednesdays. But Tuesdays and Thursdays is purely for interviews. Then those that have been wrongly dismissed, the officers that were dismissed or interdicted, they can appeal to us. We look into it. If they are found wanting, we support the decision taken by the line ministries. But if we see that there is need, that that person has been, because of one reason or the other, it was wrongly abused or misused, we take sides. We support him.
And what procedure do people have to go through to bring that to the commission?
Well, like if you have been superseded, you are grade 10 by virtue of salary grade, and somebody in grade 7. During the recommendation period, it comes with the staff list. You first join the service because we determine seniority. We look at the staff list. If you first enter the service and you have acquired this XYZ of amount of training in various fields, then all of a sudden, because the reporting officer, he or she has some link with the one that who he wants to supersede you, and she slots him. You bring the matter to your officer attention, the reporting officer. If he does not take it because he has taken side already, you apply, you make a petition through the establishment secretary. Then the establishment secretary forward that petition here. They will look at it. President, currently we have one way which is very thorny. 10 years ago, 12 officers at the Accountant General's Department, they were involved in pension fraud. So they tampered with the pensioners' money, about 800 million, 10 years ago. So that matter is still pending. It has lingered all these years. We've looked at it. Some have even died. Others are still there. They come here every day, even yesterday, even today, some more. Those that are still alive, they are still pursuing. So we have taken a position that because it now entails a huge financial outlay. For 10 years, put them on half salary. If you did not find them wanting, you are going to return back. You give them all the money they have lost, the half salary they have lost. So very soon we'll be taking a position on that. Those are the issues we handle.
And have higher salaries been introduced as part of these reforms?
Yes. The salary aspect of that of the service is really, really appalling. As a result, over the years, there is serious brain drain, especially in the medical field. Most of our doctors, our nurses, are serving in the sub-region in other countries because of poor salary condition. The government is aware of it. We are just from the war. But government is very mindful about increasing salaries. We are taking every effort, government is doing every effort to really see that, because we want to be retaining these people, we want to be paying them. And in fact, if government really wants to minimize corruption, the people have to be better paid, the workers have to be better paid. Because if somebody is supervising millions of loans on behalf of government, I mean, temptation. We have our own commitment. If I'm better paid, if I tamper with government money, the law will take its course. I mean, I will not even be tempted to tap out government money. But when there is not enough to really take care of my domestic problems, the temptation will be too high. So we have suggested to government that let them think seriously about improving the condition of service and the salary. And to inform you, by come January, there is going to be a very huge salary increase for all workers. Government is working on that.
And where have those funds come from?
Donors. We depend on donors. Our economy is donor driven.
And have there been any other strategies considered to counteract the brain drain, particularly in the medical field? Or
if you, according to the general order, which governs, which is the working, the Bible of the service, if somebody happens to leave the service and go elsewhere, there is always a portion of the general order, GOD 161. You absenting yourself from work for without reasonable excuse. We quote that one on serving officers, that you've abandoned your position without giving us any excuse. We've within there's a specific number of days we give you, or months we give you, to react to that. But we see that, I mean, that's a deterrent. We do not deter people, because if somebody goes to America, like I have my youngest sister, she's now in London. She's a nurse, SRN. That one. She gets 10 times what I'm paid here. And she knows her job. And the British government, they want her. So when they go, they send information to their colleagues. That this is what we are getting. You are wasting time there. So this leader said they were working on it for them to go. So we are minimizing that. In fact, we have to be holding series of consultation and meetings with the Ministry of Health Work officers to see the need as how we should, what steps we should take to minimize this pain drain. But the crux of it all is really to increase a better pay home package for all of us.
And how long have all of these current reforms been in place, the strategies for promotion and recruitment?
Since 2000, the year 2000. Just immediately after the end of the war.
And how have the reform leaders and key personnel, maybe in the different ministries, worked together to make these things, to implement these
changes? All of us, we are all working assiduously, because without these reforms, life would not be meaningful. So we put our shoulders to the wheel. Yes.
And would you have advice for other countries on how to make these collaborations work?
We always have consultants who come around, and then we share knowledge. People from the sub-region, from the third world, from the first world, Britain, America. So they come, we work with hang heads, and they advise us, give us guidelines as how we go about it. And their effort is giving us a very good dividend.
And was there any resistance from sitting civil servants to these new, maybe the attempts to recruit people openly, not from outside the civil service, or more stringent promotion policies? Was there resistance? Were the civil servants who were already working, were they happy about these changes, or were they maybe unhappy that the recruitment was
The recruitment is, we're happy, except those that do not want to cherish change. But everybody who wants to advancement in his or her life will cherish the move. There are some officers who have reached retirement age, they don't want to go. Those are the ones that will be stifling the effort of government. But believe me, we have started weeding them out. Because the government has now set a retirement age limit, 60 years. Once you are 60, you have reached 60, then we issue you a letter of retirement, give you your benefit. Then we create avenue for young graduates. Because they are the young brains. We give them the old ones, the old heads give a chance to the new ones to come on board.
And when was that retirement age instituted?
Since 2005.
What are some of the major obstacles you've encountered in implementing these reforms?
Financial. Because you cannot leave these people if you don't have money to pay them their benefits.
And has there been, since some cases civil servants don't receive their paychecks on a reliable basis in some countries, and since they are not necessarily paid enough to support their families, sometimes they have another job and might be less likely to respond to incentives of how hard they work. Has that been a problem here?
Yeah, that's a problem. Well, after retirement of officers, in most cases, retired officers don't get their benefits till they are dead. They work for it. But the problem is not the government, it's we the civil servants. Because if I'm in the pension division, all these offices are manned by civil servants. All the officers are manned by civil servants. If a civil servant, your colleague have retired, you know that he or she needs to be paid his pension or her gratuity or his gratuity. If his or her document reaches your desk, if you are really, I don't know how to put it, if you are really sincere enough with yourself, because knowing fully well that you yourself will one day retire, and when you retire, the way you treat your colleague, you too will be treated, you have to fast track his or her document for him to get his or her benefit on time. But in most cases, we prove to be lethargic in handling these things. So the problem is not government, we ourselves, who the civil servants.
And with regard to the reforms in this particular area, what do you think has been accomplished?
Now, with the inception of the NACIT office, the NACIT. NACIT has now taken the place of Accountant General, there's a portion, pension division of Accountant General's department. Because with the pension division, then, before NACIT, it takes ages for them to process papers, documents of retiring officers. But now, if I'm to retire this month, the data is with NACIT. They know where I retire on the date. Before that date, my paycheck is ready. My pensions are completed. So that one.
And what is NACIT?
National Social Security.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about independent public service commissions, since that's where you are. How long has this commission been in place?
Since after independence.
Okay. And after has it always been independent?
Yes, it's independent. It has no interference. The order issued by this commission is not subject to change by any law.
And has the way that the commission works changed over time?
No. except for now, come the 7th of this month, when the establishment secretary's office will be transformed into a new human resource management office, we are going to delegate some of our functions and powers to that office, that new office, HRMO. There are some categories of appointments which we are going to leave purely in the hands of the new HRMO office. From grade 1 to 5, those ones we can leave it in there, in the hands of the new management office. The more senior positions is going to stay with the commission. And even there, when we shall have delegated some of those powers, we will now be playing a supervisory role. We will be supervising them. If they deviate from the norms, we can petition them. We are at liberty to intervene and to revert whatever all decision they have taken. But if we leave everything in their hands, the situation will not go well, because if you leave employment, promotion, transfer into the hands of one man, there is a tendency for that person to take sides. So that's why these two offices, we are going to complement the effort of one another. We'll give you the very best of officers. We train them under the new HRMO office. You have training, recruitment and training sector component there. In fact, there is a letter here written very simply. You have just invited us to send in our training needs, submission of priority training needs. So they are written this to all MDs. So I'll be working on this today and send my reaction and the areas I want my officers to get training, both especially from at overseas. I'm going to send that one there. So that component is under the Human Resource Management Office that is going to be launched on the 7th.
And can I ask you what some of the areas are that you think your staff need the most training in?
Yes, in computer, information technology. Because, typewriters are now obsolete. Then the world has become a global village. So if communication is power, information is power. So if we don't train these people to grasp the new information technology, we cannot really achieve what we are aiming at. That is the revamping of the civil service. So we want to train them in human resource management, in accounting, et cetera, a host of related areas, but more so because we are going to introduce a website here, internet, so we can be sitting here. If you look at open our web, you know what the commission is about. They can get onto other commissions there, so that you can borrow what you lack in your system from what you see from other countries which will suit your situation. So we are really going to encourage all of them. In fact, they have started. By next week we'll be going to polish my training.
And just to get back to the commission a little bit, you said that the commissioners are directly appointed by the president?
Yes, yes.
And how long do they serve for?
For 3 years.
3 years at a time.
After 3 years, it can be subject to renewal. The president can renew the appointment, but 3 years, after every 3 years, they are replaced.
And where does the budget for the commission come from?
From the Consolidated Revenue Fund.
I'm sorry?
From the Consolidated Revenue Fund.
And is could the party in power potentially influence the budget?
Hmm?
Could the party that's in power potentially influence the budget?
No.
That's developed independently as
no.
well. Okay. And how does the commission acquire the information that it needs to carry out its job?
Information? What sort of information?
Well, for instance, you just mentioned that if you had the internet, it would be easier to sort of
We are guided by this constitution. Our functions, our powers is entrenched in this Act number Section 151, Act number 6 of this constitution, I think it's our constitution. It makes this commission a statutory body. Right? And sections 151 to 154 confer the power and functions of this commission. So our activities are all entrenched in the constitution. We deal with the constitution. There is also another document, the Public Service Commission's Regulation, 1982, Public Notice Number 31 of 1982. That one is there. I don't have a copy now. So with these two documents, we cannot go beyond our mandate. There are certain positions which our powers are not covered to a point, like in the judiciary, like the police, the armed forces. They have the Armed Forces Council, so that one takes their appointment. The judiciary, you have the Judicial and Legal Services Commission, so that one is not within our purview. But the one purely in the civil service is within. So all is embedded in this, in the constitution. So that's why I always have copy.
And does the commission try to communicate directly with the public to describe what role you play?
Yes.
How do you do that?
Well, that is why we are trying to install this website. Before the website, they come here. They ask us. We used to hold seminars, workshops. And in fact, I've written a project for us to be holding two workshops. So we take the commission to the public. We tell them at that workshop what our functions and our powers are. And again, our function is we exercise disciplinary actions over officers who are holding or acting in those in various positions we have, we establish. Because if you are found wanting, we will dismiss you. There are codes and conduct in the civil service which all civil servants will go by. If you fall below that code and conduct, we'll fire you. So we have the power to hire and fire. But normally we don't fire. We encourage you, officers, to really work within the code and conduct of the service.
Would you like to talk about training or about recruitment of new talent?
Yes, very soon. Very soon, we start advertising vacancies.
Oh, uh-huh.
Very soon. Our constraint has been that the current commissioners, their term is ended. They are now going out. New ones have been appointed. Very soon, say in the next 1 week or so, by next week they'll be on the job. So since March, we have been there has been a moratorium. We have been going slow. We have not been working. So a lot of vacancies have been put on hold. We have not been advertising because the signature of the old commissioners was freezed by government. So, but luckily, the current ones, the new ones, they have gone through parliament. It's now left for HE for them to swear in into office. Once that is done, then we go to our normal function. We start interviewing, we advertise, and that kind of thing.
And what are some of the steps that have been taken to make civil service appear to be an attractive career option for people?
Civil service itself, the service itself, I mean, it's a career. I mean, I've spent my whole life in the service. I joined the service in 1982. To date, I'm there over 30 years. So it's a career. Like, you go to foreign affairs, it's a whole career service. If you are employed here, then we send you to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. Their own training is very peculiar because they are educated, they handle diplomacy. So they are a professional. It's a professional ministry. So every ministry, like here, I too am a professional by virtue of my standing, my long standing in administration, my wealth of experience in administration, right? So that kind of thing. If you are in a culture, the ministry, your profession depends on the ministry. Like in the agriculture ministry, Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, you have agriculture officers, you have extension workers. These are the ones that really make things happen. Because we sit in Freetown here, the extension workers are in the field, directing farmers how to plant, when to plant, etc., etc. So that ministry is purely professional ministry. So if they are there, they are purely professional. You go to foreign affairs, diplomacy. Okay.
And as far as, let's go back just a moment to training. The IPAM, the Institute for Public Administration Management, that's sort of the training institute that has been created, is that correct?
Well, the work of, we used to have a civil service training college. Mm-hmm. But for quite some time now, that training college has been defunct because of financial reasons and other reasons, but purely financial. So, but we've been trying to reactivate the Civil Service Commission. So, in the absence of the Civil Service College, IPAM, most times, took the place of the Civil Service Training College. So, most of our officers, we send them there on 3 weeks. Or 1 week training courses, or even master's programs. But very soon, we will be reactivating the Civil Service Training College, where we will be training, especially for the junior cadre of the service. So for the junior cadres of the service, there we land in stenography. Now we don't have stenographers. It's only now we are trying to handpick the old stenographers who have retired. We are planning to bring some of them back on board. Those that with sound mind, they will start training these young graduates in the art of stenography. Because if you go to Parliament now, Parliament is presently handicapped because they don't have a relaxed stenographer. You go to the law officer department, they too, they are handicapped. So we have seen the need as a government and as a service that we need to train a new class of officers in stenography. Because if I have stenographer, I can't do much writing. I just come and talk, you know. But over the years, the old hands, they have all retired. So we are creating a situation where we have to train new ones to take their places as part of our reform effort.
And have you personally been a part of designing or managing any of these training programs that are in place?
Well, we have Mr. Oshokoka is in charge of that office. Oshokoka, mm-hmm. Have you met him?
He's actually out of town.
Really, he is heading. So he usually put programs in place. Then we are invited. We go and hang out at meetings. So we give our own input as how we can go about this training.
We could talk about either payroll reliability in the payroll system or retrenchment.
No, payroll is the purview of the new Assembly Secretary's office.
Right. And did you say you had some thoughts on retrenchment?
Yeah.
I have some questions.
For those that have reached retirement age, some conceal their information, vital information, because they don't want to retire. So we have all records on them. I keep record on them here. When they come for interview, I send part to SM Secretary's office, then some to their department, land ministries. But when it comes to time of retirement, they destroy their own information there, so we cannot get the right information about them. But when you come here, if you destroy that one there, you cannot destroy all in all the ministries, in all the departments. So always you come as a reference point to us. That's why, in fact, I'm going to create a database. When that once that website, then I got funding for inserting it up.
And are there records that were lost at some point? And how are you collecting that information?
Well, that is we have problems. We have problems. The problem is, like, you see these files, some of these files have taken long years. You see, tattered documents, papers get tattered, you know. And in case of fire disaster, we lost all this information. So that is the reason why I've put in place a project. I'm going to send that project to UNDP for funding, so that we can set this website and put a thorough data on all containing information on all serving officers. So at just a stroke of, we can just go into our data, we get all the information we need on each and every officer, every ministry. Yes, but as it is now, it's not reliable. I'm not guaranteed somebody can walk into those offices, because most of these offices are in the junior officers, the staff superintendent, and our staff deal with this. It's only when I need it, I say, bring this file. We have file numbers. I call that number, then they bring it to me. That place is always open. On the newly or unknowingly, somebody, some scrupulous somebody will come and enter, they get at that information. And this place, whatever we do here is purely confidential. But because we have these files, the clerks, their letter they can read, they have their own interest areas, so they can divulge information from to the public, information that that was not really supposed to reach the public. By their activities, those information can leak out. But if we have a thorough database, except you are computer literate, you cannot access it. So that is what I'm going to really resort doing, by the grace of God.
And when you go through that process, how will you ensure that the records you have are all accurate?
Yeah, well, I'm going to employ an IT technician who is going to manage that place. Already, I have him on board. In fact, he's now putting in place the few machines, the old ones. I've got the parts. He's going to put them together. There's a website here, but over the years, I mean, all have phased out. So he's going to. If I don't have the IT man on the ground for myself working in this commission, I mean, I've not got the desired result I want to get. So when he is part and parcel of the commission, like this computers, when you call an outsider, say, come and look my computer, it has some virus. In the process of clearing that virus, certain part that works on the computer disappears. You can not know until he's gone. When you come, you say, this part is not there. And you have to resort to buying them. You see, so I've seen the need that if we get our own IT man, employed and paid. I think, I mean, we can keep some amount of sanity.
If we can go back for a minute to talking about the recruiting process, I was just wondering if you could describe a little bit about what you are looking for when you are evaluating applications of people.
Okay.
What are some of the qualifications?
Yes. When we are looking, we are putting out adverts. We call qualification, like somebody has to have first degree. Now, first degree has been outdated. Now we look for master's degree in related fields. If it is the vacancies in agriculture, from the agriculture ministry, we look for candidates with the buyers who are agricultural buyers who have gone to Jala, they have done their degree in the agriculture, agronomy, etc., etc. If that is the requirement, when the advert comes, when the forms, application forms come in, we look for that. We set our criteria. There's a criteria. A qualification we look for.
And how was that criteria established?
Well, we have under the Office of Secretary Estimate Secretary's Office, under training and recruitment, they draw the scheme of service. We always meet, in fact, I've been invited. By next week, we'll be meeting on the, we'll be discussing a lot of scheme of services from land ministries. We set criteria as how vacancies in those ministries can be filled. At times, we'll look for work experience. We cannot just take you because we want to take you. We have to set criteria. Qualification has to come in. Then a number of years, you have to work for a number of years, et cetera, et cetera.
And have you had trouble finding people that meet the qualifications?
Yes, a lot. All the colleges, they are producing graduates on a daily basis, so to speak. Jala, Fobe College, Mete Magai, you name them.
And are there enough positions for all those people?
Well, the few positions that are available, we'll put it, if it is 10 positions, we put it, most time we get over 100, 200 applicants for those 10 positions. So when they come, we look for the very best, we place them. Intermittently, when vacancies are created, we advertise it and we take them on board.
Has there been any attempt to develop sort of citizen monitoring programs or boards as part of the reform so that the public has a chance to sort of oversee the reform that is going on?
Pardon?
Has there been any effort to create a citizen monitoring system or board so that the public has more of a view of the reform?
Yes. In fact, we have a very vibrant civil society movement. These ones, they poke their nose in all facets of life, politics, civil service, they probe the NGOs, etc., etc. Yes, the civil service, the civil society movement, are really vibrant, and yes.
And has that, do you think, helped to encourage faster reform?
Yes. Because if I tend to put certain aspects under the carpet, no, they make noise. I mean, that is helping reform very, very rapidly.
And how do they communicate with you usually?
They send letters. I mean, we go on the whole workshop. We go there. They pop in at us. They want information. They want certain information from me. They can come and ask me. Only that, I mean, I'm always restricted. We cannot just divulge information.
And then you go out and talk to them about what you have accomplished.
Yes.
As far as infrastructure, and I know we've talked a little bit about the IT situation, what other infrastructure obstacles have there been to implementation of these programs?
Well, the infrastructure is good, except that I'm trying to do a little bit of refurbishing, renovation, because most of the items have gone obsolete. And for a conducive working environment, these things need to be replaced so that we will get an effective service delivery. When they are working in a very conducive environment, you give your very best. One of the most serious constraints is transportation. Government does not really have the money, the resources to get transport for all the government ministries. So that's why we always look to goodwill donor partners to come to our assistance. Like UNDP, a month ago, some officers came from there. I have their complimentary cards. I make an appeal for us for them to assist us with transportation so that this plan I have in mind for us to move the commission halfway to the people so that we can minimize absenteeism or late coming, we will jump that hurdle. So transportation, really. And computers, of course, they give us computers. These are all from donors, UNDP, mostly DFID.
And how have people worked around some of those challenges so far?
Pardon?
How have people worked around or solved some of those challenges?
I mean, we meet them if I meet, I go to Wickes Road, I meet officers there. They can move me to, they can get me to those that will make things happen there. I sit with you and discuss, I put my case to you through letters or, I mean, most cases my effort has been positive. Yes, my effort has been positive. Like we go to, the last time I went to the Chinese ambassador and we were able to get a few things from him. And even in terms of training, they invited us, finding some of our officers and even commissioners to go to China to get a working knowledge of their own system there. And then when we came back, you know, what we gained from them, we related to our situation, they will move forward.
I have a few more questions. I wanted to ask you quickly about the relationship between the host country and the donors. This is obviously the donors provide a lot of support and do a lot of wonderful things, but I think they're also always looking to learn about how they can improve their relationships with the countries in which they're working.
Very cordial, because these donors, they always set benchmarks, which government, if you fulfill it, you continue their support. If you don't, they'll give you time for you to match up. And we have always endeavored to really meet the benchmark. So we're in good working relationship.
That's good. Are there any mistakes that you think that sometimes donor countries or international organizations make when they're relating to and building relationships with host countries and host country personnel? Any problems that come up?
Well, like the problems, like the donors, like the NGOs. The NGOs, when they bring their money, they don't want to go. They don't want us to sit together and plan and decide where and where to go. Because they have their money, they come with their money, they want to detect, go and go where they are not supposed to go. Then in most cases, we clash over. But that one, I mean, most often those problems are rectified. Because we don't want to, they don't want to cluster. If you come for a culture, we have to, if we sit together, we know where we need you. We send where, we tell you where you operate. But if you go for yourself, the tendency is that you go and clash with another NGO in a culture, you cluster at one point. So that is the problem that usually crop. We don't fatigue in one area. Like if you come for education, you know where to go. You go to the education ministry. Then you work with that line ministry. But mostly when they come, they want to go to do things on their own. And my soldiers, they run into not much of a problem really, but just to put them through, we guide them that we should work together.
So what advice might you give to donors, either here or in other countries, about how to work effectively with personnel?
That they work effectively with government. The donors and government are partners in development. So partners should work together.
So if you could write a handbook for people working on civil service reform in other countries that have challenging environments, what would be some of the things you would say would be most important to talk about?
Let me get it again.
If you could give advice to people in other countries trying to do civil service reform like you have done here, public service reform in general, what would be some of the things you would think would be most important to tell them?
Better coordination. Better coordination. You work together. Teamwork. Because two heads are better than one. When you sit together, you put your effort together, your brains together, your resources together, your ideas together, then you move forward. So teamwork. Proper planning. Then the political will has to be there. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do, the decision has to be taken to government. Yes.
Is there anything else that I haven't brought up that you'd like to talk about that you have worked on?
We've touched on everything.
I think so.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. If I can just ask you to close up, what are the things that you think you're most proud of that you've accomplished in terms of reform here?
Yeah?
Yes.
Yes. I'm just, as I told you, I go on and off. By the time I was here 6 years back, all the reforms I did, like I rehabilitated the whole ministry, the whole infrastructure development, that one, I've reactivated it again. Asked for fund, it has not come yet. If that one comes, then I'll have to reform it because the roofing, I have to do some infrastructural development effort. Then the obsolete working tools, I'm trying to really put them back in place, get new ones through support of goodwill donor partners. Then training, of course, I've sent two of my officers. One is going for his first degree. He's right now he's on his master's. Two of them are in the training colleges. So only I've sent five officers in college. They are in college. Then the other ones they are doing computer courses elsewhere. In various computer establishments, I'm paying for them so that when they come back, they can handle these things. Work will be very easy for us. So in terms of training, I'm training my, going all out to train myself and my officers. Because I have to be computer literate. Not every information I want my officer, my clerk to know. When I'm computer literate, I can go into into the internet and the website. So I'm doing. It's not easy. Most depends on availability of finance, but with the support of God and the good donor partners, I'm on the move.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mr. Okay.